What of this one, this Louis Wu?
For us, there has been much profitable cooperation with men. Naturally, we choose at least one human. Louis Gridley Wu is a proven survival type, in his casual, reckless way.
Casual he is, and reckless. He challenged me to single combat.
Would you have accepted, had not Roth been present? Would you have harmed him?
To be sent home in disgrace, having caused a major interspecies incident? But that is not the point, the Kazin insisted. Is it?
Perhaps it is. Louis is alive. You are now aware that you cannot dominate him through fear. Do you believe in results?
Louis maintained a discreet silence.
If the puppeteer wanted to give him credit for cool intellection, that was fine with Louis Wu.
You have spoken of your own motives, said Speaker. Speak now of mine. What can it profit me to join your voyage? And they got down to business.
To the puppeteers, the Quantum II hyperdrive shunt was a white elephant. It would move a ship a light year in 1.25 minutes, where conventional craft would cross that distance in 3 days. But conventional craft had room for cargo.
We built the motor into a General Products No. 4 hull, the biggest made by our company. When our scientists and engineers had finished their work, most of the interior was filled with the machinery of the hyperdrive shunt. Our trip outward will be cramped.
An experimental vehicle, said the Kazin. How thoroughly has it been tested?
The vehicle has made one trip to the galactic core and back.
But that had been its only flight. The puppeteers could not test it themselves, nor could they find other races to do the work, for they were in the middle of a migration. The ship would carry practically no cargo, though it was over a mile in diameter. Furthermore, it could not slow down without dropping back into normal space.
We do not need it, said Nessus. But you do. We plan to turn the ship over to our crew, together with copies of the plans for making more. Doubtless you can improve the design yourselves.
That will buy me a name, said the Kazin.
A name? I must see your ship in action. During our trip outward.
The Patriarch would give me a name for such a ship. I am sure he would.
What name should I choose?
Perhaps...
The Kazin snarled on a rising note.
The puppeteer replied in the same language.
Louis shifted in irritation. He couldn't follow the hero's tongue. He considered leaving them to it, then had a better idea. He pulled the puppeteer's holo from his pocket, scaled it across the room into the Kazin's furry lap.
The Kazin held it delicately in his padded black fingers. It appears to be a ringed star, he observed. What is it?
It relates to our destination, said the puppeteer. I cannot tell you more, not now.
How cryptic. Well, when may we depart?
I estimate a matter of days. My agents are even now searching for a qualified fourth member for our exploration team.
And so we wait upon their pleasure. Louis, shall we join your guests?
Louis stood up, stretching.
Sure, let's give him a thrill.
Speaker, before we go out there, I have a suggestion. Now, don't take this as an assault on your dignity. It's just an idea.
The party had split into sections. Tri-D watchers, bridge and poker tables, lovers in pairs and larger groups, tellers of tales, victims of ennui. Out on the lawn, under a hazy early morning sun, was a mixed group of ennui victims and xenophiles. For the outdoor group included Nessus and Speaker to Animals. It also included Louis Wu, Tila Brown, and an overworked bartender. The lawn was one of those tended according to the ancient British formula, seed and roll for 500 years. 500 years had ended in a stock market crash, after which Louis Wu had had money and a certain venerable baronial family had not. The grass was green and glossy, obviously the real thing. Nobody had ever tampered with its genes in search of dubious improvements. At the bottom of the rolling green slope was a tennis court where diminutive figures ran and jumped and swung their oversized fly swatters with great energy.
Exercise is wonderful, said Louis. I could sit and watch it all day.
Tila's laugh surprised him. He thought idly of the millions of jokes she had never heard, the old, old ones nobody ever told anymore. Of the millions of jokes Louis knew by heart,
99% must be obsolete. Past and present mix badly. The bartender floated next to Louis in tilted position. Louis's head was in Tila's lap, and his need to reach the keyboard without sitting up was responsible for the bartender's tilt. He tapped an order for two mochas, caught the bulbs as they dropped from the slot, and handed one to Tila.
"You look like a girl I knew once," he said. "Ever hear of a Paula Cherenkov?"
"The cartoonist, Boston-born?"
"Yeah. Lives on We Made It nowadays."
"My great-great-grandmother. We visited her once."
"She gave me a severe case of whiplash of the heart long ago. You could be her twin."
Tila's chuckle sent vibrations bouncing pleasantly along Louis's vertebrae. "I promise not to give you a case of whiplash of the heart if you'll tell me what it is."
Louis thought about that. The phrase was his own, created to describe to himself what had happened to him at that time. He hadn't used it often, but he'd never had to explain it. They always knew what he meant.
A calm, peaceful morning. If he went to sleep now, he'd sleep for 12 hours. Fatigue poisons were giving him an exhaustion high. Tila's lap was a comfortable resting place for his head. Half of Louis's guests were women, and many of them had been his wives or lovers in other years. During the first phase of the party, he'd celebrated his birthday privately with 3 women, 3 who had been very important to him once, and vice versa. 3? 4? No, 3. And now it seemed that he was immune to whiplash of the heart. 200 years had left too much scar tissue on his personality. And now he rested his head idly and comfortably in the lap of a stranger who looked exactly like Paula Cherenkov.
"I fell in love with her," he said. "We'd known each other for years. We'd even dated. Then one night we got to talking and wham, I was in love. I thought she loved me too." "We didn't go to bed that night. Together, I mean. I asked her to marry me. She turned me down. She was working on a career. She didn't have time to get married," she said. "But we planned a trip to Amazon National Park, a sort of one-week ersatz honeymoon." The next week was all highs and lows. First, the high. I had the tickets and the hotel reservations.
"Did you ever fall so hard for someone that you decided you weren't worthy of him?"
"No."
"I was young. I spent 2 days convincing myself I was worthy of Paula Cherenkov. I did it, too. Then she called and canceled the trip. I don't even remember why. She had some good reason. I took her out to dinner a couple of times that week. Nothing happened. I tried to keep from pressuring her. Chances are she never guessed the pressure I was under. I was going up and down like a yo-yo. Then she lowered the boom. She liked me. We had fun together. We should be good friends."
"I wasn't her type," said Louis. "I thought we were in love. Maybe she thought so too for about a week. She wasn't cruel. She just didn't know what was going on."
"But what was the whiplash?"
Louis looked up at Tila Brown. Silver eyes looked blankly back, and Louis realized that she hadn't understood a word. Louis had dealt with aliens. By instinct or by training, he had learned to sense when some concept was too foreign to be absorbed or communicated. Here was a similar fundamental gap in translation. What a monstrous gulf to separate Louis Wu and a 20-year-old girl. Could he really have aged that drastically? And if so, was Louis Wu still human? Tila, blank-eyed, waited for enlightenment.
"Tange,"
Louis cursed, and he rolled to his feet. Mud spots slid slowly down his robe and dripped off the hem. Nessus the puppeteer was holding forth on the subject of ethics. He interrupted himself, quite literally, speaking with both mouths, to the delight of his admirers, to answer Louis's query. No, there had been no word from his agents. Speaker to animals, similarly surrounded, sprawled like a great orange hill across the grass. 2 women were scratching at the fur behind his ears. The odd Kzinti ears, that could expand like pink Chinese parasols or fold flat against the head, were spread wide, and Louis could see the design tattooed on each surface.
"So," Louis called to him, "was I not brilliant?"
"You were," the Kazin rumbled without stirring. Louis laughed inside himself. A Kazin is a fearsome beast, yes? But who can fear a Kazin who's having his ears scratched?
It put Louis's guests at their ease, and it put the Kazin at ease, too. Anything above the level of a field mouse likes having its ears scratched.